Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 33 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi. You can find me at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And our topic for today is India's rainbow woes. I can promise you it's got nothing to do with gender inequality. We're actually talking about India's inability to win a test series in South Africa. Of course, it has been their final frontier ever since they won that test series, or the first test series, in Australia. And they still haven't been able to conquer that demon, winning a test series in South Africa. Now, they've played 8 in total before this one, and they've lost 7. They drew a series, actually, in 2010-11 under MS Dhoni, and that's the only series that they haven't lost. Out of 22 test matches, they've won only 4, and in the recent test, in the 9th series, they lost the first test by an innings and 32 runs. So, does this just surprise you at all, Jared, given that India have been a very elite team in test cricket in recent years, at least, and there's a gulf between the talent in India's squad and that within South Africa's?
Yeah, I think sometimes we forget how rarely test matches are played and how you can get records like this in test cricket, because it's a bit like the Olympics. You can be the best athlete for 10 years, right, and win one Olympic gold. And that is because the years that you played didn't quite overlap with when the Olympics were there, and maybe got injured one time, or maybe someone did a freak, you know, performance against you. And you look at, I'm not saying it's exactly like that, but there's probably a little bit about that. We know that, since 2010, India have been the best team in the world 2 or 3 times, right, at that point, you know, for decent amounts of time. But has it overlapped with them going to South Africa? I mean, you can argue not, right? You can argue that they had slipped at certain times. I think the last series is the one where it's hard to not see the golf in class that you were just talking about. I think the last one is like fair. But before that, like, you look at the people who performed against them, you know, Alan Donald and AB de Villiers and Callis and Sean Pollock. And you're like, well, okay, that's fair. Like, if you're going to South Africa and you're playing those guys, you know, and Ntini takes a 6-wicket haul, or Ngidi takes a 6-wicket haul, you're like, okay, well, we have to expect that. So there's still a lot of talent in South Africa, but I think it's remarkable based on how well they play in Australia, and also how they think about the Australia, because they seem to put so much emotion. They're almost like England in the Ashes, right? Like, teams get so emotionally caught up about beating Australia, they're like, I'm never going to South Africa. And the tests aren't as long. They don't get as much buzz. Like, you know, we usually see a huge uptick on our site when India play. We didn't really get it for that South Africa test, right? And it's not the first time. I don't think we've ever had a big uptick on that. So it doesn't get the same sort of hype that England will, and that what Australia will, and everything else. But I do think that some of it is just dumb luck of just, you know, the time that you play, that you're not there. But they've certainly been in situations where I think you could argue that they should have won a series by now.
Yeah, I mean, at least for the last two tours, I have seen some hype. I get that it's not the same compared to when they tour Australia or England. But, you know, KL Rahul is coming on Star Sports and talking about it and stuff like that in the ad. So there has been some hype, and it would bother India that they still haven't conquered their final frontier, which is the Rainbow Nation, which is why the episode is named what it is. But we're going to go through each of India's tours in this podcast, and we're going to discuss them at length. Let's start with 92-93. South Africa ultimately won that 4-match test series 1-0. But this was a competitive series, at least for the first half. India were the first country to tour post-apartheid South Africa for a test series. And that was quite big, wasn't it, Jared?
It was. So, you know, I think South Africa were quite clever. You know, with everything that had gone on in their history, they decided to play West Indies first and then play India, right? Like, I think that was the order, wasn't it? I think because India was the first team to tour them, but I think they might have played in the West Indies before that. I'm pretty sure I'm right on that. I think that was the one where they bought champagne. Merrick Pringle bought champagne, and then they lost against the West Indies. So, look, South Africa was very much in development as a side at that point. But I don't think we would say that India was a great team by any stretch. Like, you know, Kapildev's coming to the end. You know, you got sort of the Kumble Srinath sort of thing, sort of becoming something. batting was okay, but it was before, you know, Dravid backs up Tendulkar, and obviously well before Sehwag and VVS Laxman and everyone else comes in. So, you know, it's not quite on that high level of batting. And that was kind of a particularly dour moment of Test cricket, right? Before Australia sort of injected a vein in it. And I think India was quite a conservative Test nation at that time. We didn't know that, but South Africa were also quite a conservative one. And so it's not a surprise that they played four Tests and there was one victory. But again, India had chances at times. I think weather played a part and everything else. But I don't think you would say that that was... It would be very interesting to know how much India could have prepared for that, right? How do you know how South Africa is going to play?
Yeah, they didn't have any prior knowledge. And also, you know, you mentioned weather playing a part. Of course, the first test India could have won, but rain played spoiled sport. The second test India needed to chase down 303 runs on day five. And, you know, knowing how cricket went back in the day, they obviously played for a draw. Third test, Alan Donald, he took five wickets on a batting surface. And I think Cronier batted time. It was one of those series where everyone batted time, isn't it? Yeah. And South Africa won with like 7 minutes to spare. And the final match was similar, right? India batted slow. South Africa batted slower. And there was a drawn test. But considering...
I think it is worth remembering that South Africa is a very hard team to beat at home, in part because, less so in the modern era, but if you go up until, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, just because they would bat time quite a lot. And so as an opposition team, you have to almost be like an Australian side of scything through them, right? Because they are like, no, we will bat for two days and make 400 runs if we have to.
Yeah. And just considering how India's away record in Test cricket in the 90s was abysmal, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but they didn't win away from home in the 90s. Ooh. This was a good result in the end. 1-0 in four tests. Not that bad.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't think anyone quite knew how good they were going to be, right? South Africa. So it would have been one of those things where it would have been hard to get massively excited about it as a team. But also at the same time, you know, you're right. Like it's, you're going to South Africa. There's a lot of unknowns there. India won one test away from home in the 90s.
There you have it.
But this also tells you about that era. 15 losses, 23 draws. I don't think this was seen, you know, also... We're talking about the cricket, but this was really seen as a, I don't want to say political because I don't think that's the right way of doing it, but as a mending of bridges, right? Yeah. Of finally, you know, we're in a situation where we can actually do something positive here, which, you know, there hadn't been a lot of in with the apartheid and everything else. So it was, I think it was seen more as almost like a goodwill tour as much as anything else. You know, as you said, they had chances as well. So it wasn't like they were duds.
Yeah. India also have a special connection with South Africa. Of course, that's the place where Gandhi spent a lot of time. So there was that element behind the tour as well.
I don't think he played.
No, definitely not. He definitely needed to eat more to play. Starvation wouldn't have helped. But let's come to 96-97, right? South Africa won this series 2-0. The first two tests were a drubbing, to say the least. And I think the first test, South Africa won by 328 runs. In the second, they won by 282. Third test, though, India could have won, right? Rahul Dravid scored a splendid 148 in the first innings. And, you know, South Africa were reduced to 95 for 7 in the last innings. And Cullinan, Klusner and Alan Donald, once again, along with a little bit of rain, helped them draw that test. And this is a series in which Alan Donald took 20 wickets at 16. And then went on to save the final test for South Africa with the bat. It's also a much improved South African unit than before, at least compared to 92-93.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most important thing there is that if you look at that 92-93 squad, they've got a couple of old guys who were playing because they feel like they kind of needed to play them because they hadn't had a chance. There was a lot of guys who probably would have been much better cricketers, but have kind of had dulled themselves, you know, in terms of, I'm trying to think of the best way of putting it, but you know, they weren't as good as they should have been. Whereas by the time India come back, there's absolutely no doubt at that point that lineup is just so much better. right? Mm. And that's probably the point at which South Africa become the number two team in the world for a good period of time. You know, maybe slightly before that. I know they South Africa drew a series in Australia in 94, 95. I think that's right. As well, unless that was done. Yeah, I think it was 94, 95.
That's the Grandier series, isn't it? The 94, 95 one. In which 94, he came in as captain?
Yeah, I think so. It's the one where they win that test in Sydney, where they where Fani de Villiers defends 115 or whatever it may be, if I've got my years right anyway. So if you have a look, like the South African team in... was it 02, 92, 93, Jimmy Cook, Andrew Hudson, Kepler Wessels, Peter Kirsten, Johnny Rhodes, Brian McMillan, then you got Omar Henry, Merrick Pringle, Alan Donald, Brett Schultz. It's certainly not a bad team, but if you go to that 96, 97. Yeah. So by 96, 97, it's Hudson, Kirsten, you've still got Adam Bucker, but Cullinan is in by that point. Hussey Cronier is captain. Herschel Gibbs, Sean Pollock, Lance Klusener, Alan Donald, right? It's a much, you know, much more stronger team. And India is probably just at that period where they're about to become a lot stronger as well, right? And you know, so it makes sense they got a bit of a kick there. And as you said, you know, almost a win at the end.
Yeah. Let's go to 2001, 2002 now. You spoke about goodwill earlier in the 92-93 series. Fast forward 9 years and that goodwill took a hit, didn't it? Now, Sourav Ganguly was leading India. He was at the helm as captain because of the match-fixing scandal that pretty much ended the careers of Hansi Cronje and Mohammad Azharuddin. India had a good blend of youth and experience. Sehwag got a ton. They lost a test match, that Sehwag test match, quite considerably in the end. South Africa chased, 54 in the fourth innings to win. But here's the interesting bit. In that test match, match referee Mike Dennis, he sanctioned Virender Sehwag. And who else was it? Was it Harbhajan?
Sachin got a fine as well, didn't he?
For tampering the ball, then excessive appealing. And also Sourav Ganguly, because they said he, or Mike Dennis believed that he failed to, you know, control his players. India went on to play all of those guys in the third test, which was then, you know, changed to an unofficial test by the ICC. Lots of drama. India lost by an innings. I remember Ravi Shastri really went off at this time. I've seen that in some documentary. Unfortunately, a series which South Africa won 1-0, but it would be remembered for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, India took a really good team here. As you said, that sort of mix. This is Dravid, Laxman, Tendulkar, Sehwag, Kumble, Srinath, Zahir Khan and Ashish Nehra, right? Like, Ganguly's obviously going to struggle probably more in South Africa and have Shiv Sundar Das was the opener. So it's not like every player was great. Deep Das Gupta was the keeper as well.
This is post-Kolkata 2001, right?
Yes. Yeah, it must be. Yeah. So, you know, it's a good era for Indian cricket. And yeah, I suppose now it is famous for that Mike Dennis moment of, and also of Indian cricket. It's probably Indian cricket's first political stand and, you know, set up everything else. It is still remarkable that they decided to play their suspended players. And it shows you that cricket was quite amateur at that point in that it didn't really have a system. Well, like, you know, it didn't have a proper tribunal system that could have been done correctly and everything else. And so the whole thing became a scandal. And I remember also Jax Rudolph played in that test, in the unofficial test. And I could be wrong, but I think it was his debut. And I think there was a lot of people going, wait a minute, this guy's made his test debut and actually hasn't played a test. It was incredible. And I watched that series live. I think I watched the first, I would have watched the unofficial game as well. Mm. But I certainly watched the first two test matches. India was such an exciting side at that point, you know, with Zahir and Sehwag and everyone coming through, plus the great players they had around them. This, again, was quite disappointing because let's pretend that third game was made a test match. They still got absolutely smashed. So, again, they have lost another series quite full on, really. Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our heads, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers and protect your computer today.
NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortfalls or when rights issues try to dismiss me. NordVPN will help you get through the straight bat of any geo blocks so you can watch all the cricket you want. If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set up for you to win. Want to buy an associate cricket shirt from a place that won't ship to your country? Select NordVPN. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? NordVPN. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow you to, promote NordVPN to pinch it for you. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 additional months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a cricketer protects its nether region with NordVPN today.
Yeah, I think the one thing that really bothered India was the Sachin tampering allegation. That's the one that really hit a nerve. And I think, now we look at India as a global powerhouse. You can see the seeds of that maybe being sown, or maybe that confidence that, hey, we're India, don't mess around with us. That sort of thing maybe originated over there. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, everyone at that point in cricket, everyone was tampering with the ball, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's, if you wanted to get the ball to reverse swing, you were tampering with the ball. Like, that's just what people did. And there's all this piousness about, you know, Pakistan with the cheats, and then Australia becomes cheats and sandpaper and you whatever. And it's just like, guys, you talk to international cricketers or first class cricketers behind the scenes, and they're just like, we're constantly tampering with the ball. But yeah, so I do think there was an element of that as well. There's also an element of the cultural, and it wasn't just India that this happened to. I think Pakistan happened to a couple of times. The over-appealing side of things, because the Asian teams appeal in a different way than the Western teams did. And there is a cultural bias written into the playing conditions. And I know the ICC are quite aware of this, and over the years have tried to make it a little bit more fair, because it was written by, you know, English and Australian and South African, New Zealand people at times. And I think there was a cultural racial sort of bias towards that, and I think the Indians were a little bit upset with that as well, you know, I've got no problem with them making all those comments, but if your players are suspended, you shouldn't be playing them in the next game. However, that probably got us to a better system going forward than what we actually had at that time.
Yeah, the racial bias bit, I think that's what Ravi Shastri's monologue was all about. And I've seen Ravi Shastri animated all my life, probably never that animated. I don't know where I saw that clip, but I would advise you guys to go to YouTube and search for it. But anyway, 3-2 is down. India still have not won a test match in South Africa. That changes in 2006. It's the Srisath versus Andre Nell series. That's what I remember this one for. And India won the opening game by 123 runs, courtesy of Srisath. You know, he activated beast mode. South Africa were bowled out for 84 in their first innings. And that definitely is going to be one of those golden moments for India in the annals of Test cricket history.
Yeah, I think bowling South Africa out for 84 is, you know, quite incredible. And also, as you said, that it was the first test. They won the toss in that one. They decided to bat. And if you go through those first three tours, I think there's three occasions where they win the toss and decide to bowl. So they really do mature a little bit when they get to, by the time they're there in 2006. Look, Srisath was a fantastic bowler. I wouldn't say he's like the exact kind of bowler you think would be successful in South Africa. He's really probably should have been more suited to England or New Zealand, the kind of bowler he was. But there was something about South Africa specifically as a team. And I also think that they thought he was quite soft. You know, Srisath is, as someone who spent a little bit of time with him, quite prone to wild swings. And I think South Africa thought they could get under his skin. And unfortunately for them, they probably, as you said, unlocked beast mode. So they win that, you know, they win that first test, and the animosity from that first test carries on all the way through that series, right?
Yeah. And I remember Srisath got a lot of bounce. I mean, that delivery to Jack Gallis, I think I still see videos of that delivery going around. And that's the best I've ever seen him bowl in particular. Unfortunately, that career dwindled because of other reasons. But come to the second test now in Durban. India needed 354 runs in 146 overs to win that game, and they got demolished, right? Then in the decider, of course, they still had a shot at winning the series. India made 411, right? And they even had a 41-run lead, but then Dale Steyn wreaked havoc in the second innings, and South Africa chased down 211 with 5 wickets to spare. So that could feel like the one that got away, because at that point, India had established themselves as a proper unit that competes outside of Asia, you know.
Yeah, I think they made 414. If I wrote 411 in the piece and tricked you, that was my fault. But they made 414, and then they batted until the fifth session.
Mm.
And it's, you know, you're one all in the series at that point. At the very least, you think you've probably taken out enough time, you know, to do something. And then it's not like, you know, I think South Africa, even though South Africa were about 40 or 50 runs behind, they batted, I think, almost identical amount of overs. So, you know, 9.5 to 10 sessions have been taken out of the game just by the first two innings. All India really needed was a competent third innings. And they just got stuck. Ganguly and I think it was Dravid and Tendulkar just got completely stuck. Couldn't get the ball away for a period of time with Paul Harris bowling very defensively, and I think it's Pollock who might have taken Tendulkar's wicket there at that point as well. And then, as you said, Steyn just comes in, completely wipes away that the sort of lower middle order and tail, and that's it, right? And South Africa chased 211, and it's a really disappointing position to be, you know, to have a lead of 40 or 50 runs. To have, well, I think Dravid and Ganguly were batting together, so they were 90 for 3 when Ganguly went out. So at that stage, they're what, 90 for 2 with about 130 run lead. You don't think you're going to be setting a 211, and you certainly don't think, you know, you're at a major chance of losing that game. So really disappointing. But the fact that it was also the deciding match was just so much worse.
Yeah, and Andre Nell got the last laugh then versus Srisanth, even if Srisanth took the spoils early on.
Srisanth got the first dance.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go to 2010-11, and this is that one solitary series that India managed to draw in South Africa. They lost the first test by an innings and 23 runs. And that set South Africa 303 runs to win at Durban in the second test. Won that game. Another series decider 4 years later. Kallis scores 161. Tendulkar scores 146. It's a tight game. Kallis scores another ton. Twin hundreds. And that's another famous game in, well, South African cricket history, of course, because it was a series decider. And needing 340 runs, just under a day's play left, Mahendra Singh Dhoni opted to go for the draw. Now, you could look at this as heroic because India had only ever lost a test series in South Africa, and here they managed to not lose one. But then again, you know, if you look at cricket right now, that would be frowned upon, because why not just go for the win when you can? So it's a tricky one.
I mean, you know, you were probably following cricket pretty closely by this stage.
Mm-hmm. I remember this game.
Teams weren't there were teams who would have gone for a win. Obviously, Australia would have, and I'm sure there were other teams around at that point that would have gone for a win. But there was a lot of teams who probably would have gone for a draw. The only thing I would say is that if you look at the strike rates, it would be hard to say that they ever went for the win, which is, I think, different. I think what you would have seen with most teams is they would have given it a bit of a go. But I don't think that's the way that Dhoni was looking at things at that stage. And so that's how he went about it. I'm pretty sure I was writing on my blog at that stage, and the Indian fans were so upset when I called them out for the way they batted. And they were like, "You don't understand. We've never drawn a series before." And I'm like, "Yeah, but you've also never won a series before." And, you know, Sehwag makes 11 off 40. Like, at least let him have a go, right? Let him have a couple of sessions. See if he can do anything at all. I just think it was a real waste. But that is the way that, you know, Dhoni thinks about cricket, right? He is a lot more pragmatic than most players, and we've talked about that a lot. And, you know, he was thinking about it from that. No, we have a draw. That's fine. It's just it wasn't a good end to what could have been a great final test, I suppose, right? So it wasn't good from that point of view, and it wasn't good from a spectating point of view, because, you know, in the end they drew it quite easily.
Yeah, it was the safer option, right? And of course, a lot of Indians will look at this as a victory on its own because they didn't lose that series. But hey, you could have won a series back then, or potentially just lost another one. But then the downside is that they would have never or lost all series that they played in South Africa, right? So it's a tricky one. I mean, I think maybe Dhoni went for the right call. Maybe, I don't know. But anyway, let's go to 2013-14. I mean, of course, from a spectator's perspective, that's definitely true. But anyway, 2013-14, South Africa win that series 1-0 and chasing 458 runs in the first test. AB de Villiers and Faf du Plessis, they made daddy hundreds. And they ensured a draw, but they could have won that game. That's what I remember that game for. You know, 16 required of 19 deliveries, and they kind of just shut up shop over there. That is one of the most surprising finishes I've ever seen in any test match in all of my 20 years of watching this sport.
It was remarkable, wasn't it? Because you were watching two teams basically decide they were going to draw when both teams could have won.
Yeah.
You know, it was just and again, Dhoni was involved. But the South African side of things was really, really interesting. And I wrote I mean, both of these games I wrote articles on, and both games I got attacked by, you know, various fans for it. And I was like, guys, like, you know, you can. So I think it was Steyn was at one end and it was Vernon Philander at the other end. Mm. Like, I think you could probably just say to Vernon, have a go.
Yeah.
Say to Steyn, don't have a go. And they still would have got close. But India seemed just as happy. It was just an absolutely remarkably weird game. And the fact that two test matches in a row, despite the fact they were like 4 or 5 years apart, were so, both had teams not going for the win. I think it does show you, and I think things have slightly changed, certainly at times within Indian cricket, but even times within South African cricket. Both those teams are fairly conservative cricket teams, right? Mm. They are more defensive, you know. That's Pakistan and Australia. Both teams are probably going all out to get a win, right?
Yeah.
And it just depends on how you look at cricket. And I think that in that particular case, it was, again, just, it was so weird. It's so hard to win a test match. And for both teams to get so close and just go, well, we gave it a go, was just a remarkable moment of cricket, really.
Yeah, and Big Vern is no mug with the bat. He averages in the 20s in Test cricket over a long period of time. So yeah, very, very baffling. And rumor has it, Jared, that when you talk to Ben Stokes or Baz McCullum about that Test match, they puke. So anyway, next up in Durban, this is Jack Callis's last ever Test. Of course, a bona fide legend of the game. Scores a memorable ton and allows South Africa to actually win this Test by 10 wickets. A fairy tale finish to what was a fantastic career.
Yeah, and I think also it's worth noting that, you know how we were talking about the timings? This is really interesting because they do actually go up against Callis right at the end of his career. The time you really wanted to play them was just after this.
Yeah.
Right? So Australia go over and play against South Africa just afterwards and beat them at Centurion. And so they beat them 2-1, right, straight after this. And it was a good Australian team. They'd obviously just beaten England, but it wasn't that much better than this Indian team, I think, all things considered. But India still had to go up against Callis, whereas Australia had to go up against Ryan McLaren and Robin Peterson. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a big difference between those kinds of teams. I think Robin Peterson was batting at 7 against Australia. And McLaren at 6 because they were trying to overcome for Callis. And we know over the next little while, and that's the other thing is, that team, that South African team for whatever it was, 8 years, was arguably the best team, well, certainly over the 8-year period was the best team, right? Hmm. But they weren't undefeatable at home. They were actually an incredible road team, right? When they would go on the road, they were like just absolutely, it was almost impossible to beat them. And then you got at home against them, and, you know, you sometimes had a bit of a chance, partly because the test matches in South Africa are such low-scoring games that they bring in a bit more variance into it. But you look at all that, and it still meant, though, that India missed that 2 or 3 year period when South Africa were trying to retool around Callis because they ran into him in this series, which meant that they weren't going to come back for another 4 years. And by that stage, South Africa had moved on from worrying about Callis, right?
Yeah. I mean, let's get to that series, I suppose, now. 2017-18, South Africa won that 2-1. And in the first test, once again, Faf and AB, they rescued South Africa from a position where they were 12 for the 12 runs for the loss of 3 wickets. And they posted, 286. Then Hardik Pandya went berserk when India were 92 for 7. So India was still behind the game, but this was also Bumrah's debut. Rolled South Africa over for 130, and India had to chase 208 to win this test. That's when Big Vern went crazy. 6 for 42, got Kohli's wicket as well. And yeah, I mean, it was one of the more evenly contested games that we've seen between the two sides up until this point, you could say.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is the first series where you would say that India had a legitimate chance of winning.
Yeah.
The series. That doesn't, I mean, obviously they came close to winning in other times, but I don't think you would have said that coming in. Whereas at this stage, you probably think to yourself, this is a very, very good Indian team. And they have a legitimate chance of winning this series. And realistically, I think I had them as favorites coming in. But that first test is an absolute shootout, right?
Yeah.
So the top score in the whole test is 286. And I think it goes, I think I've got this right. It goes 286, 209, 130, 135. So the scores are, you know, quite getting lower and lower. Vernon Philander was just incredible at the end, bowling to Virat Kohli and to everyone else. He had it on an absolute string. I remember talking to Cricviz not long after this, and they said that they could tell he was the most accurate bowler in the world because when he bowls in the fourth innings of test matches, he has the highest percentage of any bowler in the world of hitting the stumps. He just doesn't let you off. And that's essentially what he did to India. And that spell to work over Virat Kohli was just an absolute piece of art. I think Sid Morgan might have written about 3,000 words on that spell.
And I mean, he's that sort of bowler who was bowling the wobble ball before the wobble ball became a thing. A keeper would come up to Vernon Philander. He'd really not give you anything, right? I had the pleasure of speaking to Big Vern when he visited Pakistan. He's a fantastic bloke as well. But come to the second test now. Kohli scores a brilliant 153. But, you know, India buckle for 151, chasing 287. They won the final test, though. And in Joburg, Kohli batted well. Bhuvneshwar Kumar had pretty much the best test of his life. And as did India's other seamers did well as well. So not getting swept was certainly a plus over here. But again, on quality, India were probably the better team. And this was the first time where, like you mentioned, they really could have won a series.
Thanks to the kind folks at FlexiSpot for looking after my office and my butt by sending me their E7 Pro desk that save your favorite desk heights at a touch of a button. You don't have to crank anything. This thing just finds the height that you like and you can work. And their BS12 Pro chair that supports my posterior while I'm recording, well, this ad and all my shows. If you need great desks, especially ones that change heights or the best quality chairs, head on over to FlexiSpot. Yeah, I think that first test, if they bat first, they might be the ones who get over the line there, right? Like, it was a bit of a shootout. I remember, you know, watching that game. It's interesting. If you go back, the South African team looks incredible on paper because it's Elgar, Markham, Amla, De Villiers, Faf, QDK, Vern, Maharaj, Rabada, Steyn, Morkel. And so you're saying, wait a minute, you're saying India should have had a chance, but not all those players were peak.
Yeah.
Right? There's a lot of guys who, you know, Maharaj was not the Maharaj of now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he wasn't at that level. Elgar was still, was pretty good, but obviously would get better. You know, that was kind of almost like his coming out as a star, that particular series. Steyn was almost done. Morkel was almost cooked. Like on paper, it looks like a better team than it was. But India felt like we hadn't seen Bumrah in Test cricket at that point, so we didn't quite know. But you know, they had Hardik, they had Ashwin, Bhuvi, Shami. Like they had all the bowling they needed. They had Vijay and Dhawan opening, Pujara, Kohli, Rohit Sharma. Like there was a lot of talent in that side.
Yeah.
And it felt like a lot of those guys were a bit more close to peaking, certainly as a team. But as you said, it just in the end they were done over pretty easily. And you know, I think if that first test had gone a different way, it would have been a very, very interesting series. Mm-hmm. But you know, that doesn't seem to be those sort of things always seem to go against India when they're in South Africa.
Yeah, that seems to be the trend. And you've brought this up. I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent, but it's a good one. You've brought this up a couple of times, how India have, you know, tended to bat first later on. Earlier, they'd opt to bowl first, but as they became a more sturdier side in Test cricket, they would bat first. And four wins out of their four wins in South Africa, three of them have come when they've won the toss and batted first. So yeah. Could we call it pure bad luck that they haven't won more because they haven't won more tosses?
Look, I think one reason why the toss doesn't particularly work well and why it probably should be abolished for the away team to choose is because if you want cricket to be a more 50-50 sport, which I would assume is the idea, you would get rid of the toss. And I think that, and I'm sure we'll come to it later, but there are structural reasons why India is not particularly good in South Africa. And they need everything to go their way. So yes, I think they, in order to have won a series, they would probably need, you know, they obviously need a very good team and maybe a slightly weaker South Africa, but they also then need luck at the toss. So there's a lot of things that need to go their way.
Yeah, two toss wins out of three at the very least. Oh, well, now two out of two, based on the way Test cricket is going. Anyway, let's come to 2021-22. South Africa win this 2-1. This is the series that everyone thought India would win because they had defeated Australia in Australia. They were up against England 2-1 due to that COVID hit IPL. And then when they traveled to England once again, they got baz-balled. Should have won that test too, you could argue. But anyway, KL Rahul, he scored a ton at Centurion in the first game, similar to this series as well. But India went on to win that game after securing a 130-run lead because their bowling attack was simply too good for South Africa to chase down 305 in the fourth innings. But yeah, this was that tour, which it really seemed like India would conquer their Rainbow Nation demons. And the series ended with Kohli screaming at the stumps, lots of DRS controversy, KL Rahul saying that it's 11 men against an entire nation. Lots of fun stuff over there.
Yeah, it was. I think you're right. This is the other series, I think you could say India was on the ascendancy and South Africa, the team looks good on paper, but probably wasn't quite as good. But you could still make the claim that South Africa at home, maybe with a slightly better side. This was the first time where it would be very hard to argue that they're a better side. You had a very young Marco Jansen. You had Wiaan Mulder, Keegan Peterson. Like, these are not strong players at that point. You know, they're opening with Markram. You know, Rassi is another struggling first class player. That, you know, their bowling attack was okay. But I think that first test, if I'm not mistaken, which they lost, they had Wiaan, Jansen, Rabada Maharaj, and Ngidi. You could argue at that point that's a three-person bowling attack.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not particularly strong. And India win that test, and that is the point at which you think, well, they should go on. And of course, they get themselves into a winning position in the next test. And it does not go well. And to be fair, I think the next test, Wiaan Mulder gets dropped, doesn't he? And they bring in Dwan Olivier, as you would. I think you talked about him. The second podcast today, we've brought him up. But,
and he's also been selected for the New Zealand tour. Dwan Olivier is on his way back.
He is. And so their bowling attack gets stronger. It does obviously mean that their batting's a little bit weaker. But the point being that this is not a strong South Africa team. It is another, and I think this is worth remembering, it is another bit of a crapshoot game, that second game. So India make 202 and 266, and South Africa make 229. So it's low scoring all the way through. And then somehow Dean Elgar just chases 243. I don't want to say in his own, but certainly it did that. I don't think anyone else made a 50 in that innings. And they chased that total down pretty easily, all things considered. And I don't know if I watched that innings live. No, I watched the second half because I must have watched day five. Was it day five? No, day four. Sorry, I must have watched day four. So I missed day three for whatever reason. And I watched day four and I remember just thinking, when's the collapse coming? Right? Like, you know, I thought Elgar might end up not out, but I thought there would be a collapse. And it just never came, right? They just played brilliantly.
I think that's not spoken about enough because South Africa won the second test chasing 240, the third test chasing 212 against a very formidable Indian pace attack. And I remember on Twitter when South Africa was set that target of 240 odd, Every Indian felt uber confident that they were going to win that test match. I felt that India was going to win that test match. You felt that there was going to be a collapse. So really, that would be Dean Elgar's legacy, more than the 185 that he's just scored.
Yeah. Also worth remembering that that was the match that Shardul takes 7 for.
Yeah.
So that I would say that if you actually look at their seamers, and it's a good lineup, it's Bumrah, Shami, Siraj, and Ashwin was in the side as well. But yeah. I think if you actually look at that team, they massively shit the bed their frontline bowlers there. And Shardul, I think he has 31 test wickets now after 12 tests, and he took 7 in that one inning, which is, it just tells you, you know, how they got a bone. They basically got the great spell of Shardul, and it didn't matter.
They basically got that one spell of Shardul. The reason why he's called Lord Shardul Thakur, that's the spell.
It comes from there, right, doesn't it? Yeah.
That's probably the reason he played the first test at Centurion in this series, right? Because they had that bit of history and they were like, oh, maybe Shardul will, you know, get a 7 for again. But that definitely didn't happen. It, if anything, it cost India that game, at least his bowling, along with Krishna. But yeah, let's come to the bigger picture over here, right? 22 test matches on South African shore. They've won 4. It's a span of 31 years. So it's quite a vast sample size too at this point. And their batting record is better than Sri Lanka. Their pace bowling record is better than Sri Lanka. They are still not the only Asian side. Oh, well, Sri Lanka is still the only Asian side to have won a test match in South Africa. And that is one of cricket's great anomalies.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we were talking about before, that if you go there at the right time and things go, you know, if India had gone there, I mean, cause India have really strong teams in 10, 11 and 13, 14. If those two series are both a year later, they probably win that second series. Not because they're any better, just because at that point, South Africa is falling apart, right? So,
yeah.
You know, and so then you do have the idea of Sri Lanka, who win, you know, very rarely in South Africa, but have won a series, and India, who have a better overall record, not having won a series, as you said. I've heard a lot this week. Random South African guys like all the Indian batters are shit scared. I'm like, well, the Indian batters actually do a lot better than Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and Bangladesh batters, right? So again, you can't throw that in. I reckon there's a couple of major differences. One is that the seam bowling of India is noticeably it's good, but it doesn't probably have the impact that it needs to win a series in South Africa, right? That doesn't mean they shouldn't have stolen one, because you look at these numbers and you think they should have stolen one, but it's the fact that their spinners haven't handled South Africa as much, and that is not. That's not what you expect to hear, right? But you have a look at this. If the Indian seamers have been doing, and I think the Indian seamers on average are just under 30, I think is their overall mark. If the Indian spinners had been slightly better in the way that the Murali has, and Saqlain Mushtaq and Mushtaq Ahmed have had success over, and Syed Ajmal, I think might be another one who's had success. So Sri Lanka and Pakistan have had multiple spinners who have had a pretty good record over there and being able to back up their quicks. Whereas the Indian spinners average, I think, combined total of 35. So Harbhajan has a 7 wicket haul. I think Kumble has a 6 wicket haul, a 5 or 6 wicket haul. Jadeja, I think, might as well. Mm. But they're all quite expensive. Yeah. They're not, and that is, you know, those things really matter. The other thing I didn't talk about much in the piece, but I probably should have focused on a little bit more is, I think the bowling average in South Africa since 1990 for seam bowlers is the lowest in the world. Mm-hmm. And the bowling average, the seam bowlers, the highest in the world is in India. Mm. And I do think that that matters a lot. It is, even though we all know that Indian players are better, Indian batters are certainly better than Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and Bangladesh as units, right? Individual players, those countries have had really good players, but as units, it's not even a question, right? India in that 40-year period, or was it 30-year period, have had certainly had better batting units. But there's still something to be said for this is the hardest place to face seam in the world.
Yeah.
And that is hard if at home facing a seam is the easiest place in the world, right? I think the big difference that people don't talk about a lot. So I had a friend of mine who did some analysis, and he said he thinks the problem is the height of the South African bowlers getting extra bounce. Mm. I said, well, that can't be it, because that happens in Australia and you get more height because the bowlers are generally taller in Australia and you get more bounce. I said, I think the difference is it's the combination of the sideways movement and the bounce, right? Mm. They can, in Australia, you don't have to worry about sideways movement, right?
Yeah.
Look at Pujara. Pujara's just like, I'm just going to play off stump line over and over again, and you're going to occasionally hit me on the body. I can handle that. You can't do that in South Africa, because you need to be, the ball just moves too much. And so I do think it's a combination of their spinners not finding a way to conquer South Africa or even be useful in South Africa enough, and the fact that their batters can't handle that dual combination. And Rabada is a perfect example of this, because Rabada can beat you with lateral movement and he can beat you with surprise bounce. And so it's no surprise to me that he's the bowler that they had the most trouble with in this series.
Yeah. I mean, there's some interesting points raised by you over there. Of course, the numbers suggest that India have been the best Asian batting side in South Africa. Maybe that's courtesy of those high-scoring tours in the early 2010s, because they batted really well in those tours, right? So maybe that's inflated the averages a bit. And the seam bowling one is the one that surprised me, because if they have the best seam bowling average for any Asian side, to me, conventional wisdom suggests that not having your spinners perform as well would not, you know, dent your chances that much. But clearly, that is something that has been a factor over here. And, you know, South Africa is not one of those venues where you expect spin to play a big part. But maybe that is exactly the reason why this is an issue.
So on the seamers, I think their seamers have bowled well enough to win them a series. But have their seamers bowled well enough to win them a series at the same time their batters have batted well enough to win them a series?
True. Those things haven't overlapped.
Yeah. Which, so Sri Lanka is, because Sri Lanka have won, it's hilarious, because we could see that Sri Lanka's record isn't as good. The only thing that Sri Lanka have done better is that Murali and Harath have done better in South Africa. And some of their other spinners of recent times as well have done better in South Africa than the Indian spinners have. Right. But you don't need to be consistently good. You just need it to work once to win a series. Right. And when we look at India's bowling and you go, wow, you know, they're averaging 30 with seam, that looks really good. But remember that the average in South Africa is 25 for all seam bowlers, right? And I'm guessing the average for South African seamers is much lower than 25 based on Steyn, Ntidi, Pollock, Donald, you know, Mornay, Morkel, Rabada.
Every random debutant Philander. That plays a series versus the Asian side.
So Martin De Lange, he's 10 wicket all or whatever it was, right? Yeah. So my guess is that the average for seamers is even lower in South Africa. And so you would need to probably be in a situation where you are averaging quite low. But having said all that, it still goes back to that luck thing. Did you play them at the right time? Was your team the right team? Were they a little bit weakened or out of form or maybe had injuries or anything else? That Sri Lankan series is, it's got fluke events, right? My memory is that spinners played a much bigger part in that series than usually do in South Africa. And then we had perhaps the greatest innings of all time, right? Mm-hmm, you know, when Hardik Pandya, when Hardik Pandya makes the 80 or 90 in one of those matches that India lose, if he makes 200, bashing the ball everywhere, Kapil Dev early on might have done something like that as well.
If they had Stokes scored a double 100 over there, right?
Stokes and Bairstow went absolutely nuts. They just haven't really managed that, right? And so I would say that their seam bowlers have more or less stood up, but like, as an overall unit, but they haven't quite combined at the right time in a series with their batters. And if you compare that to the Australian tour where they won, you know, with the Gabba victory and everything else, where all they had shitloads of injuries and they had second choice players and everything else. But if you go back, they had quite a few batters who made runs and quite a few bowlers even coming in who took wickets at various times. That is a far more incredible victory than they've probably, you know, like a confluence of, wait a minute, like you're saving test matches with injured players, You've got kids coming in from IPL who don't even play first-class cricket, whatever. That is a, you know, shouldn't have happened. Whereas if you look at India, South Africa, for everything we've said, they've been in positions to win series, and they are certainly the best performing Asian side within South Africa over that time, but they haven't managed to bring everything together at the wrong time, which they did in Australia. And, you know, the truth of this is we are talking about how many series? Is it 11?
Nine.
Yeah, 11 series.
Wait, how is it 11?
No, nine. You're right. Nine series. We're talking about nine series in, what, 32 years, 33 years?
31.
Yeah, 31. I think that's right. 31 years. The chances are that you won't be there at the right time. It happens. How many series of Pakistan won over there?
Never. They've never won.
How many series of Bangladesh won over there?
Not even close.
And Sri Lanka have won one?
Mm-hmm. And you needed Kusal Janet Pereira to go on an absolute rampage. Or not even a rampage, just literally play the most uncharacteristic innings of his entire career.
I'll take it further. You needed Pereira to play that innings at the same time that global warming changed the structure of South African pitches for Sri Lanka to win, right? So again, that goes back to Australia, India beating Australia with their second string team, right? Sometimes you just get lucky and it just works, right? You play the right team at the right time in the right conditions and you somehow make it work, right? And I just think that has not happened for India. And when it comes down to it, South Africa, a couple of years ago when South Africa got quite bad, I kept saying they are still an incredible side because they still have four and five bowlers that they have at any stage. Will they win consistently? No. Can they win occasionally? Definitely. Because when it gets right, and did South Africa win a test in Australia?
Well, they used to win them consistently.
No. On this last tour.
They might have won a single test match. I think so.
There's no way they're anywhere near as good as Australia, right? Like they had no batters. They almost didn't bring a batter on that fucking whole tour, right? Yeah. But they managed to beat Australia over there in that one test because the danger of their bowlers getting it right. Well, where do their bowlers always get it right? At home. Which means that, you're going to go over there occasionally and Rabada might miss a test match with an injury or suspension, as he quite often gets as well. Your bowlers will have a say, but they're constantly dangerous. So even when they're weaker, they're dangerous. But having said that, these last two tours, I don't think India are going to be like if I'm Rahul Dravid and Rohit Sharma, I'm looking at this going, there's something that we are doing that is wrong in our preparation. There is something that is not right here. Whether they can fix it or not, I don't know. But I think that's undeniable at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at these last two tours in particular, the variance in quality between both those sides has been immense. You look at South Africa's team right now, and there are not a lot of experienced names out there, right? And once again, India will not be able to win a test series in South Africa. And we've mentioned a lot of different factors, right? You spoke about the toss as being one, India's lack of spin bowling prowess, India's seamers not bowling as well as South Africa's, even if they're the best seam bowling Asian side, their batters not, coinciding those performances with when the bowlers do well. But ultimately, would you say that the fact that there's a lot of lateral movement on South African surfaces compared to, let's say, Australia, where India have won two test series, that would be the biggest factor?
I think it's a combination. I think that they've shown in England they can handle, and New Zealand, that they can handle lateral movement.
Yeah.
And they've shown in Australia they can handle bounce. It's a combination of both. Which is hard. The other thing I would say if you are a batting team, which India has been through most of that period, no one makes runs in South Africa, right? Like, it is a low-scoring country. So you are going in knowing that you are probably not going to make as many runs as you would in a normal series without really anything to do to counter that, right? Virat Kohli's played some great innings. It doesn't matter. Sachin Tendulkar has played some great innings. They're still going to get bowled out for 150 at a certain time.
Yeah.
Because they're still going to go up against Pollock, Donald, Intini, Rabada, Philander, etc. Right?
Stain.
We could keep going on. That's the point, right? Mick Millen, Farni de Villiers. Like, their backup bowlers have been incredible. And so I do think that, I know Pakistan haven't done any better, but I could almost see why Pakistan
could have a chance of winning just because Pakistan could put together a bowling attack that is also unplayable at times, right? Whereas India, I think, have a really high skill bowling attack for a lot of that time. But it is really, they're not like Pakistan where they're bowling or bust, right? It is a combination of their entire team that gets the wins. And you are limiting what their batters can do in some of those situations. And that is one of the challenges of South Africa. We don't talk about it enough, but, you know, when you go to England, we talk about the green tops. And occasionally in New Zealand, we talk about it. No one makes runs in South Africa, right? It is a really hard place to score runs. And it has been for a very, very long time. I do think it is a lot, in large part, that combination of the vertical bounce, not quite the speed that you get in Australia, but the vertical bounce and the sideways movement, which for an Asian batter are two things that you're not used to.
It is arguably probably the hardest place to bat in Test cricket across the globe. And I mean, India, look, Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, even Bumrah, right? Who's to say these guys will be around when India to a South Africa next for a test series? So I would say that's a big missed opportunity over here, because this was the crop of players that India should have won a test series with in South Africa. And certainly, you know, Star Sports and the entire hype that was around this being the final frontier on of that, this was the time to conquer it, I believe, and they might have missed a trick over here. But what do you think India need to do to beat South Africa in one of these series? Maybe schedule one of these series during the SA20?
That would be hilarious if they did that. Look, I mean, the truth is that we don't think that South Africa is going to go on to be a strong team for a long period of time now. If India keep coming every 3 or 4 years, they're probably going to win. Just because India will bring strong sides, and eventually they'll get the right get the right matchup at the right time. But that is a part of it. I was thinking about this before. What if South Africa just stopped playing test cricket? It would be so annoying for India and Pakistan to have never won there just because they stopped playing. But that is also a possibility, like of that India might never tour in another test series over there again. I don't think it's likely, because I think South Africa will continue to try and play cricket against India just to make money. But there is a possibility going forward. So, look, if they keep playing them every 3.5-4 years, I would assume at a certain point that they're going to beat them. I don't think looking at their record and looking at all those matches that they're in, that this is a team that shouldn't have won a test series there by now. I think this is a team that definitely should have won a test series there by now. And their future is a lot brighter than South Africa's is.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I concur with that sentiment. And if someone from the BCCI is listening, what you guys need to do is get the IPL owners to prepone the SA20, strong arm South Africa to play a test series with you when they've given up on the format, and conquer that final frontier. But that'll be all for this episode of the Footmarks podcast. If you enjoyed it, like, share, subscribe to this channel and Jared's other channel. We'll be back with episode, 34, 35? I don't even know anymore. Next week. For now, that'll be all. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you are a podcaster who happens to waffle on and you need a way to cut down your long-form content, Memento FM is here to save the day. They turn your lengthy media into bite-sized chunks for even the most time-starved audience. Start using Memento FM today.